Today we're joined with Gary Shepherd, who is an FDR practitioner. Gary's a lawyer and also a social worker and has many years of experience in mediation and in the practice of family law. Today what I'd like to talk to him about is his experience as an FDR practitioner and trying to assist people in what the process is. So thank you, Gary, and welcome.
Oh, good morning.
Now, Gary, first of all, you're both a lawyer and a social worker, is that correct?
That's right, yes. I started as a lawyer. I've been in law for over 40 years, and then I did a social work degree in the early 2000s.
And you're what's called an FDR practitioner. First of all, what does that mean, and what's the FDR stand for?
It stands for Family Dispute Resolution Practitioner, which is just really a fancy way of saying that I'm a mediator of family law disputes.
But you're certified by the family court, is that right?
Or accredited with the Attorney General's Department.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a course that now has to be done by a practitioner or social worker?
Yes, it now has to be by way of a graduate diploma. So. Which I have, of course.
And so other social workers don't have those qualifications. That's right, isn't it?
No, that's right. Not all social workers. The actual practice of family dispute resolution is an extra thing that social workers or solicitors can undertake.
When I started in law, there was no such thing as an FDR practitioner. That's come about under the amendments to the Act, hasn't it?
That's right, yes. I mean, really, probably when both you and I started in law, Stephen, there was almost no such thing as mediation.
There wasn't, that's right.
I certainly can't recall it back in the 70s or 80s. So.
No, unfortunately, we both remember those days.
That's right.
And mediation is something which has been in probably, what now, 15 years, I guess?
Yeah, 15 to 20 years. I think the Legal Aid Office started a sort of a mediation process back in the early 90s, but it was very small scale at that stage. It's really grown in the last 15 or 16 years.
And then they changed the Act now, which requires parties to have to go through FDR with an FDR practitioner. Anything else can happen with children's matters, haven't they?
That's right, except for some limited exclusions that relate to family violence or other sort of exclusions that might mean that the process of mediation is not appropriate for the parties.
Or, as I say to clients, if a child is about to be put on a plane to go to Rio de Janeiro,
obviously.
Then the urgency provisions will prevail.
Exactly, yes. Mm.
So, Gary, as an FDR practitioner, you're approached by other practitioners and individuals, is that right?
That's right. Yes, I'm approached either by legal practitioners or by individuals directly. Mm-hmm. Yes, if I'm approached by legal firms, it generally means that they've already, of course, spoken with their clients about the process and are looking to book my services for a family dispute resolution mediation. If the approach comes from an individual, generally speaking, the first thing I have to do is send an invitation to the other party.
And you send that directly to that person?
I send that directly to that person, and that invitation asks that they agree to participate in a family dispute resolution process with myself as the mediator, and I forward some information in the form of government brochures that explain the process and explain the sort of outcomes that can be achieved, and also generally send an agreement to mediate which sets out details of my qualifications, what sort of costs are involved, and what to expect at the mediation itself.
And with regards to that invitation, it's not threatening, is it? It's an invitation, and it's intended not to be that way.
Absolutely, it's very much a conciliatory sort of an approach to say that you know, if there are these issues, whether they be children's issues or property issues between parties, that there is the opportunity made available for them to resolve those issues and come to a mutually acceptable agreement rather than going through the court process.
And you're completely independent, aren't you?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So even if one party said, look, I'll pay your fees, Gary, and the other side doesn't have to, you're still independent in those circumstances.
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, in my role as an FDRP, I can't give legal advice. That's not my role. So I do maintain very much an independent role in the process, and my role is to assist the parties with their own negotiating and to try to reach an agreement that is acceptable to both of them.
And do you recommend then that people go and see lawyers to get advice before they go to this process?
Look, it certainly makes my job easier if they've had some legal advice to start with. That doesn't always happen. Sometimes people, of course, they're at liberty to choose whether they do or don't want to get legal advice, but I do recommend that. And they, in my process, I don't have a problem with people bringing their lawyer to a mediation if they wish. And you know, very often I find that's very helpful.
So what if someone had a lawyer and someone didn't have a lawyer? How do you handle that?
Yes, well, we can handle that sort of an imbalance. I'd always ask the person who doesn't have a lawyer whether they feel comfortable, for example, being in the same room with the other party and their lawyer. If they don't feel comfortable, then we can run what we call a shuttle conference, where I'm speaking to the party separately and I act as a messenger, like, and go backwards and forwards between the parties. You know, very often, of course, it depends on the particular practitioners involved. If, for example, Stephen, if you were acting for one party and the other party were unrepresented, I would have no hesitation in saying to the other party that you're not going to bludgeon them.
No, thanks, Gary. And if that happens with the process itself, you have an introduction. First of all, whereabouts do they do the mediation?
Well, look, I'm very flexible with that. If the parties agree to a venue, whether it's one of their solicitors' offices or another venue, I use a couple of places in the city, including the Queensland Law Society mediation rooms and the Administrative Appeal Tribunal mediation rooms, and there are a couple of others available. Some of the venues do. There is a charge involved. It's not terribly onerous, but even as a further alternative, I offer the opportunity to do a telephone mediation. That's fairly common these days with the parties on LinkedIn. Yes, quite common.
The process of the mediation itself, do you have an introduction that you say to people? What goes on then?
Yes, I go generally with the process once everyone's around the table or whether they're shuffling.
So you get the parties together initially, or?
Generally would try to get the parties together initially unless there's some excluding factors, as we mentioned before. I go through an introduction to explain the process and to explain the confidentiality. That's an important thing, that the process is confidential and the negotiations that take place within the mediation can't be used by one party against the other at a later stage in court proceedings if they arise, so that people can feel free to negotiate without that hanging over their heads. I sometimes refer to it as the cone of silence, like the old Get Smart series on TV. So there's that, and I explain those sort of matters that are excluded from mediations and various other things. We go through that. Then I take an introductory sort of position from each party and how they feel about the matter. Don't try not to get into offers and counter-offers too early in the conference unless it appears that that's going to expedite things. Generally try to find out how people feel about what's been happening in the past and what they'd like to accomplish out of the mediation.
And the purpose of it is not for a marriage guidance. It's purely just about children or property. That's right, isn't it?
That's right, yes. Yeah. No, it's to try to resolve those sort of issues that they might otherwise litigate. Mm.
So how long do people could expect to be in the in that sort of process? How long would it take?
Look, in my experience, I've done in excess of 3,000 mediations. About 4 hours seems to be the benchmark. Now, some do settle in a little bit less than that. Some go a little bit more than that. But it does seem to take around 3 to 4 hours to deal with those sort of issues.
And if they are able to resolve it, what happens then, Gary?
Well, generally, the agreement would be reduced to writing at the end of the mediation, either by the legal practitioners, if there are legal practitioners there, or myself in a dot point form. If the parties are willing to sign the agreement at the end of the mediation, then they both sign and date it, and I take photocopies to give to each party. As far as parenting issues are concerned, a signed and dated agreement at that point becomes what's called a parenting plan, and that agreement can be produced to a court at a later time to show the court the agreement that the people reached in the mediation, and courts will generally pay very significant attention to signed and dated parenting plans. They rarely go against them unless there's some obvious reason to do so. Some people might want to say at the end of the mediation, look, I'm happy with what we've agreed here, but I want to take it away to my solicitor to have a look at before I sign. And, of course, there's no pressure within the mediation itself for people to sign if they don't feel comfortable doing so. So they're at liberty to take it away to a solicitor if they haven't brought a solicitor with them. Further than that, some people want to actually convert the agreement that they've reached into a court order, and that process can be undertaken. People can do it themselves with the assistance of the court registry, or they can engage solicitors to prepare the necessary documentation for the court. And the agreement, in a typed-up form with a bit of extra documentation, gets filed in the court and issues as what are called consent orders. And those sort of orders are just as binding as any other court orders, of course, but the difference being that it's something that they've agreed to between themselves instead of just having somebody else impose it on them.
Mm, which is always the best way for everybody, isn't it?
Absolutely. If you've been able to come to an agreement yourself, you've got ownership of that agreement, and that's definitely preferable to having somebody else who doesn't know you or your children imposing something.
And judges prefer that. How often have you heard them say, well, you both the mother and the father can make the best decisions if they can work it out?
Yeah, look, we hear it every day, don't we?
That's right.
Further than that, how often have we been in court and seen people front up before a federal magistrate or a judge only to be told, look, this is ridiculous, get outside and sort it out.
That's right. And all the grief that goes with that.
That's right. That they might have done by going to mediation in the first place. Yeah.
So if parties, that's if people want to cooperate, if people don't want to cooperate with the process,
yeah,
what happens then? Is a person who has asked you to convene the mediation, what happens to them?
Yeah, sure. If I send an invitation out to the other party and they either decline to participate or simply don't answer, where it relates to children's matters, I issue a certificate to the requesting party. It's called a Section 60I certificate, and that is needed for that party to then make an application to the court seeking the sort of orders that they're looking for. And that certificate says whether I think, I should preface this by saying that I issue the certificate after a mediation, even if it has taken place. If there hasn't been one, that certificate will indicate that the person requesting hasn't participated in a mediation with me, but it's not their fault. It's because there's either been a refusal or a failure to respond from the other party.
What if one of the parties comes along to it and doesn't want to cooperate and doesn't want to be part, you know, is there in presence but not in spirit, shall we say?
Right, and that goes with what the other things that I can put in the certificate after a mediation. I can indicate whether I think both parties have tried their best or if I think one did and one didn't, or if, in fact, something comes up within the mediation that clearly exempts it from that sort of a process, I can terminate the mediation and I can indicate that, you know, it wasn't appropriate to continue.
And if people can't afford a private mediator such as yourself, Gary,
yes,
what other options do they have?
There are, if they're eligible for legal aid funding, of course they may be able to go through through Legal Aid Queensland's family dispute resolution process. If they're not eligible for that, they can go through a family relationships centre. There are a number of those that offer a free service up to 3 hours with a family dispute resolution practitioner. Slightly different sort of a process, I suppose, but those are the sort of options that are available for people. There are time delays, of course, with that. I think, and I don't want to speak out of turn, but I think that they're getting up around the 5 or 6 months. You might know better than.
Yes, I've had experiences where it's several months just to. Before the process can really begin, they have an intake process.
Yes.
And that's the significant delays, which I think is a big problem.
Absolutely.
And if parties, when they come to you, do you have an intake process or do you ring them or what happens?
If they're private parties, in other words, not legally represented, I have an intake process that once I've got agreement from both parties, I'll phone them. Generally just to check that it is suitable for mediation and to satisfy myself that they're entering into the mediation in good faith and those sorts of things, that there's no risks in terms of family violence or other issues that might exclude the process. If they're coming through solicitors, it depends on the circumstances. If it's a matter that's not yet before the court, I will probably still do that same sort of process with a telephone call. If it's a matter that's already before the court, it may well be that there's solicitors acting for both parties, and certainly in my experience, most of the practitioners that are practicing regularly in family law are very experienced and very attuned to the sorts of things that are appropriate for mediation. And, you know, if I know that I'm dealing with two practitioners that do know what they're doing, I'm satisfied that there's not really a need for me to do an intake process at that point in time, other than sending out my usual brochures and what have you and getting an acceptance in the form of the mediation agreement. Sometimes, too, I should say that there's a... the court might order parties to attend family dispute resolution. And I've certainly had cases where federal magistrates or family court judges have ordered parties to attend mediation and have specifically ordered that I be the mediator. In that case, again, the court's already determined that it is suitable. So it's not for me as a family dispute resolution practitioner to be saying otherwise.
And what's been your experience about the success of this process?
Well, it depends on the mediator. My success rate is around 80 to 85%. You've got a pretty good prospect of resolving the issues. if you go to mediation with an experienced family dispute resolution practitioner. Even if you don't resolve all the issues, that you may resolve some of the issues and narrow, therefore, the issues that actually have to go to trial, which will be a significant savings in terms of legal costs.
Mm. That's so true, and a lot of people forget that the success may not be a complete resolution, but even if it's partial and limits what a decision is, what a judge needs to decide on,
yes.
You know, if that's only a few hours rather than 2 days in court, well, you've saved yourself a lot of money.
Absolutely. Mm.
All right. Well, Gary, thank you very, very much for your time this afternoon.
You're very welcome.
We really appreciate it.
Okay.